Abani Gani, everyone. This is Professor Amon-Ra, Professor Emeritus at California State University Long Beach Africana Studies Department. Welcome to the Conscious Corner program that was labeled by our historian, Joe Hembrick, who is a longtime educator, longtime rooted in a community, and a historian of Ma'at and our ancient history as far as a truth seeker and a truth teacher. And we welcome each and every one of you to hear this very important discussion about diversity. Our guest speaker tonight is, Omar Montgomery Kaumba Ra. He has a lot of that, but he's the president of the NAACP in Aurora, California. He's director of diversity for Cherry Creek Unified School District, as well as a longtime former BSU president at Cal State Long Beach, graduated from Cal State Long Beach with 2 degrees, one in criminology, one in Black studies, went on toward his PhD, got his master's degree at, I think, University of Colorado, or was that? I'm not sure. You can give us that later. And then and working on his PhD, as well as mom, Carrie, is out there in Colorado, just had a book signing, a deeply rooted book in spirituality of poetry and her deepest thoughts that was very successful. And they're just doing that thing out there. Kuma was very instrumental in working with Elijah McCain, the young man that was killed, family, and a number of other high-profile killings in Aurora and police challenges. And he works close with the city, and he works close with the various agencies there. And they've just been doing their thing. So without further delay, we let Brother Kaumba or Omar Montgomery express himself as far as giving us an update on what is diversity, and also on the McCain case and any other cases he want to talk about, because he lived in Compton, he lived in Los Angeles, the Watts area, as well as Long Beach, and then Colorado. And so he has a deep understanding of the various regional issues that we face, the difference in Colorado versus California, and different community lifestyle. So without further delay, my son, who really, when I was in captivity on trumped up charges, he wrote my defense because my attorney was pitiful. So he's the one reason that I was able to get the probation based upon his advice and his suggestions. And I was the only one of the defendants found guilty to get probation. So I'm, you know, it was just an amazing struggle we went through. But anyway, go ahead, Kaumba, and introduce yourself and what's going on.
First of all, I give honor and respect to my father, Professor Amon-Ra. I couldn't do the work I do without having a role model. And recently I was doing a podcast and they said, you know, where does your influence come from? So I talked about the influence of my mom, but then I talked about a very specific incident. I don't even know if you remember that really left an impression on me when I was a kid as to why you give back and why you fight for what is right. I was a kid before I changed my diet. I loved barbecue. And anytime I was with my father would take me to a barbecue shack. And we went to one of the barbecue shacks out there in Compton. And there was a sister there that appeared to be destitute. I don't want to say she was unhoused or homeless, but she seemed to be that way. And I watched my father talk to her and give her grace and talk to her like it was one of his own relatives, bought her food. He didn't talk down to her. He didn't make her feel ashamed for the situation she was in. And that taught me a lot about how to give back, how to give back with grace, how to be humble, and to do it in a way where you're being authentic. So I want to thank my father for being a role model and showing me a path of leadership that is not about me, but it's about the community, which leads me into just basically some of the things that's going on in Aurora, Colorado. You know, the first question you asked, what is diversity? And there's diverse definitions for diversity. Diversity to me is just the differences within. When you begin to look at the intersectionalities of those differences is where diversity really takes its course. And then the action that goes with diversity is inclusion. Am I at the table? Or as my good friend, Papa Dia, who runs the African Leadership Group out here, he always says, if you're not on the table, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And we take that seriously out here because we want to make sure that our voice is there and that those voices who are not there, we're speaking up for them. So the Elijah McClain case, for those who've been following the Elijah McClain case, first of all, the family was awarded the largest settlement in the state that has taken place thus far, but there are some other cases that may be coming up throughout the state of $15 million. It doesn't bring her son back. But what the case has done has had us really give a critical look to law enforcement. I related to the Ron Suttles case back in the early 80s, where the Ron Suttles case in the state of Colorado outlawed the chokehold. Well, the Elijah McClain case has outlawed or has definitely put a lot of restraints on the use of ketamine. For those who followed the Elijah McClain case or somewhat know about it, he was a young man walking home. A stranger out of nowhere calls and says he looks strange. He has a ski mask on in the summer, but he was anemic and always felt cold even if it was 60, 70 degrees. He wasn't a threat to no one. And when the officer stopped him, they didn't treat him like a human being. They slammed him up against the wall, didn't give him a chance to respond to the questions. He tried to let them know, hey, I am a human. I'm not a violent person. And long story short, they gave him ketamine because there's this subjective analysis that you can give called excited delirium, where through excited delirium, they can give you a drug to calm you down. This is a practice in just about every state. Some states have outlawed ketamine and use other drugs, and Colorado was still using ketamine. And the person that gave him the drug, gave him the shot, gave him two times his weight was supposed to be. He went into, he weighed like 150 or one something like that, and they gave him the dosage of someone close to 230, 240 pounds. Went in cardiac arrest, and unfortunately, a couple of days later, passed away. The mother I met that day, the day she had to take him off life support was the day her and I met. And I wasn't there when she took him off life support, but we connected that day, helped her plan the first vigil, and we've been connected ever since. What we have done in the city of Aurora is really began to take a critical look at racism and law enforcement, how it impacts different communities of color, especially the Black community. And the state attorney general just sent a consent decree so that the state can run the police department temporarily. When I say run, the city of Aurora still be doing day-to-day operations, but certain practices will come from the state. That was just voted on and approved by city council last week. So the state will be coming in to make some must needed changes in Aurora Police Department. So, you know, those are just some of the things that we work on here in the Aurora branch of the NAACP. I do want to dive into some other things, but Pops, I don't know the whole format. Do you go through questions as I go through each subject, or do I just keep going through the subjects and then as I begin to wrap up, which would be about another 10, 15 minutes, if that, and then we go to quick Q&A. What's your preference?
Well, you can intercede with questions anytime you want. Okay. We know you got, we call him the good doctor on, and what I would generally do is give everybody an opportunity to respond to your comments up to this date. And we have a good brother, Mashinda, and we have brother Hembrick, as well as Rasha Key, and we have Richard Wilson.
Okay.
And his guest there with him, she's a teacher at Enterprise, I heard her say. So we got some
people there. Love my educators. Love my educators.
All right. And brother Richard plays the drums at the family reunion with the family.
I was putting that picture. Right. Now I know where I've seen the brother.
And then second, you know, I grew up with his brother, and Joe is married to Winnie, his brother.
Okay.
Our niece. And then at the same time, I mean, it's like family. He grew up at our house with my father, them, and I grew up at his house with his mother, them. And so it was just a beautiful family thing that we got, the Wilsons and the Montgomerys. But anyway, go ahead. So, Mashinda, you have any comments up to this day or any questions?
No, I sure don't. Just welcome the guests. Sounds real dynamic, and appreciate your work. But no, I'm going to yield right now. Thank you.
What about you, good doctor?
Same here. I'm interested in hearing more of what he has to say about Colorado, because I'm very interested in Colorado.
All right, then, Brother Richard.
And being intrigued.
All right, brother. All right. And what about your guest? What about the sister? Shanice?
Very powerful.
All right.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very powerful, very enlightening of what I'm hearing about Colorado.
All right. Yeah. Brother Hembrick?
No, let the brother roll and we'll come back later.
What about you, Rasiki? You're on mute.
Yeah, I just want to give it up to my brother, Kuumba. We classmates from Long Beach State, and I'm just proud of you. Keep up the excellent work. I'm listening.
All right. Just a question. Also, tell us about the NAACP and the new building and business ventures you are going in as president of, and how long you've been president of the NAACP and, you know, the goals and objectives.
I'll sort of start with my journey to Colorado. Moving from Los Angeles, Colorado was a culture shock, straight. I was used to, you know, a lot more diversity, and definitely, you know, being able to go to different spots from Compton, Inglewood, Long Beach. And although they're somewhat connected, they're uniquely different. Each city has their own culture. Each city has their own high school. Each city has their own neighborhoods. I knew the gangs out there, so I knew what hood to go into, what hood not to go into, all that stuff. So when I moved to Colorado, it was different because the gang scene wasn't as defined as it was in Los Angeles. So we have to understand the gang scene in Colorado was a direct byproduct of the gang scene in Los Angeles. It was gang members that have moved to Colorado because they felt like it'll be easier to do drugs, to sell drugs, because Colorado technology and some of the Midwestern states hadn't caught up with some of the things Los Angeles was doing or places that already had that intact. So when I moved here, cost of living was a lot cheaper. I got in a 2-bedroom apartment in 2000 with a washer and dryer for like $700 a month. Leaving Los Angeles where that was about $1,500 a month. So I felt great. I was started working and teaching at Metropolitan State University, Colorado at Denver, in the Africana Studies Department. I currently teach at the University of Colorado Denver Political Science Department, Politics in the Black Community. And it was around 2015 when I was elected president of the Aurora branch of the NAACP. The work that I was doing in the community, a group of people took me to have some coffee and said, brother, we'd like for you to be president of the NAACP. And I was a person that was critical of the organization because I was critical of what I considered to be a lack of positions or some of the positions that they took I felt was influenced by corporate dollars and not so much by the grassroots community. So there was a little bit of a conflict there. And when I talked to the organization that said, hey, I want to bring a grassroots feel to this branch, will y'all be okay with that? And they said, yes. So out of that, we've been able to do a lot of work and at the same time, work with some corporate organizations to get some good things done in the community. Some of the things that we've done is definitely fight against racism. Well, as soon as I was elected, there was a sister that had KKK scrolled on her door, and we were able, and it happened about 2-3 times. We were able to work with the police department in the city to get her moved to an undisclosed location because we felt like she was targeted. We were able to do a lot of work with our youth, and this is prior to this recent spike in violence that's taking place now. And some of the work we were doing with our youth was, you know, some of the things that just about every other city is doing. Doing workshops on financial literacy, mental health, how to take care of yourself. You know, talking about how you prep for college, how you prep for careers, resume writing workshops. And so we are very happy with the work that we're doing with our youth. But also, if you began to look at the news recently, we've had 11 kids shot in 1 week, and they were shot at school. So we had one shooting that took place right outside of the school where 6 kids were shot, and another one that took place right in the parking lot where 5 kids were shot. Fortunately, all the kids survived. But just about every single weekend, we've been having shootings in Aurora. Mostly gang ties, social media gang banging and all that stuff. And the city is in an uproar because the city is divided into 6 wards. Ward 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1 through 3 is more of the areas where you're seeing the increase in crime. And then 4 through 6 is more of your upper middle class areas where you see a little bit of crime, or not much, but they hold the purse strings to the city. So many of the people are in denial that this is taking place. The Aurora branch of the NAACP was one of the first organizations to hold a summit last year around this same time to say the city needs to do something different to work with our youth. And some of the programs that we see today came out of that summit, but at the same time, there's still red tape because people are in denial that this is happening in the city, because it's not happening where they live. So over the weekend, and this happened just yesterday, Sunday. There was a shooting in this where this party was, and about 3 other youth, although it wasn't done at school, they're all teenagers, was shot at this party. No one died. But still, you still got these youth that are shooting each other. So we've been working with the city, having prayer vigils and all that stuff. But prayer only goes so far. And trust me, I am a person of faith. I love my faith. But with prayer, there has to be followed with action. So prior to me getting on this call, there's a group called Transforming Safety. And we're putting together a plan, trying to get those organizations that are nonprofits that's in the grassroots community that know the gangs, getting them additional resources. So whatever gang war is taking place, we can begin to stop it. This is the top priority that we have right now. One of the things that we also did during COVID, the NAACP was open up an economic development center, and I'll connect the dots in a minute. What we saw during COVID was that all these federal dollars was coming down, but Black businesses wasn't getting the money. Black businesses had to fill out these applications, and many of them did not have the paperwork or hadn't filed the taxes yet, but it made it very difficult for them to get access to the dollars in the state of Colorado. We partnered with the Wynn Foundation and partnered with the Village Exchange Center, and were able to give out emergency COVID grants to BIPOC small businesses. First, it was targeting Black, but as the money began to roll out, they said, okay, let's also include people of color. And so we gave out $100,000, and now we're in the middle of another grant where we're giving out another $100,000 within $5,000 increments to small startup, to startup businesses or businesses that's been 5 years or less. Once again, these are not loans, these are grants. We just wrote checks to organizations about a week ago, and in December 11th, we'll be giving out close to $30,000 to $40,000 to businesses. So we're very happy about that particular program, because now we get a chance to help brothers and sisters start their business, their dream of being able to reinvent themselves during the time of COVID. We also connected with DoorDash during the holiday break and was able, they gave us $10,000 and they did it in $50 codes. So we have $250 codes that we can give the families that are struggling during the holidays so that they can order food for their family. We gave out 111, still got 80 to go, but we're sure those will be gone by the end of the week. So for us, it's not just about what we do to fight against racism and things of this nature. That is our top priority. That is what we do. Hold police accountable. That is what we do. But there's another side to this narrative. Some of these kids are out there fighting because they have nothing to do. Some of their parents are working 12 and 13 hours, don't have resources. Some of those parents are applying for the grants so that they're not working for somebody, so that they could be home and take care of their kids and own their own business. And we're also doing workforce initiatives so that people can change the job that they have and go into a job that's more suitable for their family situation. Many of these kids, and especially child care centers and things of this nature, child care centers are closing half capacity. Many people are leaving the field. Teachers are leaving the field. So you have kids who are not in school, who don't feel like they need to be there because sometimes they got a sub every day. Regular teachers are taking a lot of mental health days off. Rightfully so. I don't know their situation, but the bottom line is these kids feel like that they have been neglected and no one is there to teach them how to deal with the issues that they have. So if our Economic Development Center can help the parents, and we can do what we can to help the educators, then we feel like we're doing our part to hopefully fight the violence that's happening in our community, give young brothers and sisters something else to do. Oh, and last but not least, we have we're doing $20,000 pitch program with youth. So that'll start in January, where we're going to divide it up, divide that $20,000 to where the kids that go through an economic entrepreneurship program, which we're doing the curriculum now, when they're done, they're guaranteed between $800 to $1,500 to start their business. So those are some things that we're doing in regards to the NAACP. Proud of the work we're doing. Proud to be president of the Aurora branch of the NAACP. And have some other things to share, but definitely open to any questions about any of those programs. If anybody have any questions about what we're doing with those programs and possibly how they could be duplicated in other areas.
Right. Yeah, I have a question.
Hey, Khalid?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, just hold on for a minute, because we, you're, Okay. I got a quick question for him. On those shootings, did they catch any of the people that did the shooting?
For the shooting that happened at Hinckley High School, it was 2 16-year-olds. They have been arrested. And the one at Aurora Central High School, it was a 15-year-old and I think an 18-year-old. And they have been arrested. And you know, once again, what's sad is those that were shot, lives are traumatized. And the family of these kids that's been arrested, I know some of these DAs, they're very aggressive, and many of them are going to try to charge these kids as adults. We're trying to get them to go through a restorative justice program, be held accountable, but we know once they go in the system and come out, it's going to be difficult for them kids to live productive lives.
All right. Anybody else have any?
What about Rob? Yeah, I have a question. Okay, so the summit that you guys had last year, how was it successful? And then are you going to do another summit, or are you going to plan to do more like an annual type thing?
The summit from last year, and I brought many of the key players together that's still meeting today. So what has come out of that summit was something called Collective Impact. And there's an organization that runs this type of community organizing. So the city and the county has contracted with this organization. Out of that, the city has hired a youth violence coordinator who's doing amazing work. Although we've seen the spike in shootings and the spike in violence, we still feel like we're in a position to get a hold, to bring some grassroots organizations together to work with the youth so that we can do what we can to stop the violence. But once again, it's not just the city of Aurora. Just about every single major metropolitan is seeing a spike in youth violence. Some of that is dealing with social media. Some of that is doing with drug trade. And some of that is doing with the fact that many of our kids are, you know, caught up in just a mindset that they have to prove who they are. And when they have to prove who they are, and sometimes it's the result of violence. And many of them are following what we're doing as adults. Just in Memphis over the weekend, there was a drive-by shooting. And I get to the rest of your question, Rico. But there was a drive-by shooting that on a family, two brothers were murdered. In the same time, this is in Memphis over the weekend. I try to track where the different trends of violence is escalating and seeing what other cities is doing. And just about every major metropolitan is having a hard time dealing with youth violence. So, yes, we do feel like it was a success, but there's a lot more work we got to do. And now that we have the youth violence coordinator in the city of Aurora, all of those additional resources and future summits will be channeled through her, and the NAACP will do what we can to support.
All right. Anybody else? What about you, a good doctor?
You know, I just had one question because I was looking to relocate and looking at some of the states. Colorado's on my list. I'm just curious because, you know, when I was doing my research, I was looking at the inequities in home owners. Blacks out in Colorado. Well, are you guys doing anything to help that out?
Working with an organization called NARAB, National Association of Real Estate Brokers, used to be the National Society, Organization of Black Real Estate Brokers, but they changed their name. And they have several programs where they're trying to increase home ownership. We've partnered with them, First Bank and U.S. Bank, and they have a certain amount of dollars to where they're able to help families do the down deposit and put them through a home ownership education class. That program just started this month, so we're looking forward to seeing if it yields an increase in Black home ownership, but we believe it will. And we're doing what we can as a branch to support that initiative.
Anything else, Don?
No, that's it.
All right. What about you, Mashinda?
No, sir. Thank you.
All right, brother Joe.
No, not at this time. Let him go on with his presentation.
All right, brother Richard. Y'all.
Yeah, I. You know, we often talk, you know, about the different situations in the various cities, and I kind of. You know, and I just listened to you saying that most of the shootings were done by teens. And I was wondering what type of teen programs you guys had, I mean, have in your area. Maybe we could implement them in, say, cities like Compton and Los Angeles.
I'm going to say this, like there's a food desert, there's a youth center desert in the city of Aurora. That youth center desert is one of the reasons why we're in the situation we're in now. We have a lot of programs, but it's not the places where those programs could be housed. People operating them out of their garage, or, you know, someone may say, hey, you can use my spot temporarily until we sell it. Or you got a bunch of nonprofits crowded in the same spot, but can't spread out because there's just... they're just not here. So what we're calling upon the city to do is do what you call a vacancy study. And any city could do this. Every city owns property, period. They're not using all that property. So the property that the city is not using or school districts are not using, let's give to those nonprofits so that they could do the work. Lease it to them. Lease it to them for $1 a year. If you haven't used it in all this time, chances of you using it is not going to happen. You haven't sold it. And the reason why you haven't sold it is probably because you're waiting on the land to increase even more, or the land could be having some other issues as to why you cannot sell it. Or it may be caught in your charter as to why you can't sell it. So if you can't sell it and you can't use it, then why not lease it to some of these organizations so that they can do youth programs? So we have the programs. Don't get me wrong. The city of Aurora has the programs. We just got to get them housed and get some comprehensive youth centers. One of the things we did over the summer was called Safe Zones. And what happens is some of the community organizations got with the gangs and said, hey, the kids in these safe zones got to be a neutral territory. You can't come by here doing drive-bys. You can't come by here set tripping and all that stuff. So we've done that for the past 2 years. And we felt like those safe zones was able to give kids a safe place to go between the hours of 8 p.m. and midnight. And we found that to be a success for those teenagers that was there. Yeah, there may have been some shootings in the other side of the city, but what we knew consciously was that those students that were at the safe zone, doing workshops, playing basketball, you know, the police was there on the perimeter to make sure everything was cool. The parents would come there and hang out. We had barbecue, we had game trucks, and that worked. One of the other programs I thought was successful was actually a program I helped with in Long Beach, was the Midnight Basketball Program. The Midnight Basketball Program, we had it out there in North Long Beach at MLK Park and a few other parks, played the championship game at the Pyramid. And what happened was that was for young adults. And, you know, the different gangs had their basketball teams, but we took control of the colors. So people were wearing purple, green, gray, making sure gang colors. And crime went down during those hours because the basketball games would start at 10 and we end about 2 in the morning. So, but the kids have to go to workshops before they play basketball. So the basketball was the carrot. So those are some of the things I've done personally and some of the things we're doing in the city of Aurora that we think is going to continue to have a positive impact with our youth.
All right. Anything else, Brother Richard?
No, that was an excellent response. You know, I'm just scared for our youth right now. And I see it, you know, this past week, Compton High had their they were in a championship game, even though it was Division 12. It was a championship game, and it seemed like all of Compton was there. Joe, did you go? Timber?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it seemed like the whole city of Compton was there. It was a beautiful thing. And, you know, back in the day, and I'm going to age myself, we had NYC, you know, I'm a product. Excuse me?
Neighborhood Youth Corps.
Right. And we had all these different introduction to employment. And I was wondering, did you guys have something similar to that?
It's getting more attention that we need to expand our youth employment program. One, because what we've been arguing is that there is a shortage of workforce anyway. And to be even more, how can I say, just to be even more inventive with this, or just to be more strategic with this, we would love to see them lower the age of when a kid can work. You know, right now with all the different child labor laws, this, that, and the other, you know, you can't really start working until you're about 14, 15 years old. But many of these kids are running the street working for the neighborhood person anyway. Exactly. So why not get these kids some real jobs so that, one, they can work a maximum of 10 to 12 hours a week when they get out of school. As a matter of fact, the school could be the employer where everyone have done their background checks and things of this nature, and let the kids have a job in a safe environment. So we've been sharing that with the city and the county, and we think that this summer is going to get some traction in regards to more organizations, one, hiring youth, and county dollars going towards a youth employment program. Definitely, I came up through a youth employment program. I was working at Athens Park one summer, and Jesse Owens Park at another summer, then go play with my basketball team when I was off work. So that youth employment program got me some, you know, a couple of new sweatsuits, some new tennis shoes, and kept me out of trouble at the same time. Last thing I needed was pops rolling up on me because I'm doing something crazy.
Yeah, well, that was going to happen. Doc, do you have your hand up? I see your hand in your screen.
No.
Okay, all right. Now, listen, why don't we get you a little bit about that diversity? Because, see, you know, youth is a whole new different ball game because, you know, we label a lot of them gangs. Some of them are just cliques. And some of them just want a reputation. And the culture of America is violence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they solve their problems. They, you know, assassinate, bomb, kill. They don't use negotiations to stop. The Republicans are red. The Democrats are blue. That's all Crip and blue. It's called political gangbanging. You got religious gangbanging and competing for the dollar from the gospel of service versus the gospel of prosperity. So there's a lot of gangbangers where ministers don't speak to each other because your church is too small or mine is too big and I don't need nobody to tell me what to do. You got political gangbanging, religious gangbanging. I'm a bishop and I'm a double bishop. I'm the bishop of bishops. You know, I mean, it's all kind of madness going on, as well as the conflict with the educational system, as you eloquently brought out, with regards to many teachers who shouldn't be teaching, and some that's, you know, taking advantage of absenteeism and things of this nature, and the frustration of COVID and scared. So it's a challenge, but we have a entree of kids that do not live at home. Now, in Colorado, most of the kids at two-parent homes are living with at least a biological parent, or is it like in urban areas out here where 70% of the kids sometimes go to school They live in foster homes, or they live in placement homes, or they're homeless.
It's all of the above. And once again, when I was talking about those words, those things that regard to a family. If you live in Ward 1, where a lot of the violence is taking place, you have a lot of people that's been in generations of hotels along the Colfax corridor. The low-income housing, we have a huge unhoused population in the city of Aurora. We got people that's putting along the side of the freeway. And part is the increase in the cost of living, the two-bedroom, $700. Now, the average rent in the city of Aurora is $1,500. That's for a studio or one bedroom. That's the average. Part of that was because of the influx of people that moved here and purchased homes and purchased commercial property when marijuana was there, when recreational marijuana was legalized. So a lot of people moved here and bought up a lot of property, which had a tremendous impact in the housing market. So as you begin to move in some of those other wards, you got families and kids that's gangbanging, but they stay in $400,000 or $500,000 homes with both parents in the house. There's a case that I got, the family invited me into it late, so it was too late for me to do anything. But there was her son and these other kids that were in the car got into an argument with someone who was trying to rob them or didn't give them the product for some smoking paraphernalia. And they got into a fight with the guy. And when they got into a fight with the guy, one of them pulled out a gun. They were fighting over the gun. The kid got shot and died. All the kids that's involved in this case, two parent homes and live in the upper middle class part of Aurora. So I truly believe that a lot of it is the social media culture you can't account for. Many of these kids believe that there's no accountability for their actions because some of them are living in a fantasy world. Some of them believe that some of the pranks that they see on social media, the fights that they see on social media, when you got a website called World Star Hip Hop. World Star Hip Hop, all they do is glamorize fights and shootings. That's all they do. That's how they got their name. That's how they got their popularity. When you began to look at Instagram, when you began to look at some of the other social media platforms that many parents don't know about, that only the teenagers know about, and they're sending these cryptic messages with each other as into where the parties are at, who's fighting, who's beefing. And you got hip hop artists that's being shot up and down the street that these kids look up to and feel like they have to take the same type of action when it comes to their issues. So for us, to answer your question, Pops, yes, we are seeing it in the city of Aurora, but I would also argue that the social media, that if we don't have parents taking away cell phones, shutting down social media at a certain time, checking their kids' social media, I mean, like Pop, you was I Spy with me. I didn't know how you found out stuff, and this is before social media. You knew where I was driving. Until this day, I don't know how you found out that stuff. But that's the type of parenting we need today. We need parents. I got a parent that came to me and said, that's invading my child's privacy. I said, well, you can invade your child's privacy or you could go to court tomorrow. You pick your choice. So to answer your question, yes, we have those issues in the city of Aurora, but we definitely, as a community, it is all hands on deck to begin to address these issues of violence when it comes to our youth.
All right. And the other issue is that, you know, we have a challenge. You know, America is like what Malcolm said, a hypocrisy.
It is.
They say they want you to stop violence, but they glorify it.
Mm-hmm.
their biggest budget item for the nation is military. The whole purpose of military is to destroy, not defend. They go out. I mean, you got 50,000 troops in Africa. You got troops in almost every major area. And you got munition plants. And then you want to know why kids are violent. You know, your culture is violent. You know, look at the hate talk Congress people are doing toward each other. So it's pretty hard, you know, for you to blame you when you got adults shooting each other.
Agree, 100%.
And you got a lot of jokes. But we want to get into diversity. So, and plus, tell us a little about, was that place you took me in when I went to Colorado, Four Square?
Five Point.
Tell us about that Black community or Black area.
Somebody has get into
diversity.
Pop, somebody has a hand up.
No, he don't. He don't. I asked him. He didn't. He don't. I asked him. That was Doc.
No, somebody else has a hand up.
Where?
It's who? Miss Crude Abdul.
Oh, okay, Miss Crude, go ahead.
You know what? I could say this. Omar put the nail on the casket on the part with the invading the children's privacy. You know, stuff that like with the TikTok going on, I'm at the point where I'm like, okay, y'all need to get rid of TikTok, because in the beginning, I used to enjoy kids, you know, students showing me videos that they've edited, and it was positive ones. Now it's vandalism and fighting. And when people ask me, oh, why do you think TikTok should be, you know, gotten rid of? And I'm like, well, it's because they're glorifying violence and other crimes. And when you mention, okay, either you invade your kids' privacy or go to court, I've shared this with parents and others when it came to the juvenile justice system. I told them, you know, if your child, you know, or anybody's child get locked up, incarcerated under 18, by the time the child is an adult, they're going to get served with papers to pay fees of when they were locked up. A lot of people didn't know that. And that's the way of saying, we're not going to pay for your kids being in boot camp and juvenile hall. I forget that other word. You know, you're going to pay for your kid.
They're going to pay a certain restitution to the state to cover those fees. You know, one thing I do like about Colorado is that they just opened up Judicial District 18. And it's a conservative DA just opened up what you call a diversion center, so that there's a gap between those kids that's getting in trouble. They can go to this diversion center and get services and receive services. So he told me, he says, Omar, I'm trying to stop the school to prison pipeline. And I'm like, okay, I got to see some action before I believe it. And so they just opened up this diversion program. And I want to add to something you're saying, sister. It's not just social media. The programming that's popular, The Purge, the Halloween franchise, Power, and this 8,000-9,000 different books that go with it. And I like the show Power, but at the same time, I'm an adult. Imagine a teenager looking at this and believing that they can deal drugs out of their private school or their public school and not get caught. And shows like Empire. Once again, entertainment for me, but for a teenager, it may be something that it's reality to them, or I believe that's reality. So Pops, I do agree with you. Adults have been role modeling bad behavior. This country has been role modeling bad behavior. When you look at the bombings, when you begin to look at how we deal with our international affairs, the fact that we do hit squads on leaders that don't agree with us, the fact that we bomb countries that don't agree with us, all those different things play a part in the minds of youth to justify what they feel is a way they should retaliate when they have been harmed. So sister and Pops, I agree with you. Pops, you want me to talk about diversity, but I wasn't clear on what where you wanted me to go with that so I can answer the question appropriately.
Well, you started out as director of Black Student Services at the University of Colorado, and you transitioned into director of diversity. We have a lot of issues with immigration. We have a lot of conflict in many schools were predominantly Black, and are they Latino? Mm-hmm. For a little while, there was a lot of race fighting in Linwood, California, throughout some Compton, a lot of racial slurs. Then you got this LGBT, or whatever that is, issue about using the bathroom and about except you can't use a gay slur and you can get expelled for calling somebody words that we use commonly when we was coming up. And I guess in the street homosexual. And so then we also dealt with the busing was one way. It was Black so what is the diversity aspect of I just like for you to explain what you do. What is the difference between the college position you had and the new one you got? Why did you leave? And what is diversity in Denver or in Aurora?
All good questions. I was the director of Black Student Services at the University of Colorado Denver and was an instructor in the Ethnic Studies Department, as well as the Africana Studies Department. The university I taught at, there were actually three different institutions on one campus: Community College of Denver, Metropolitan State University, and the University of Colorado Denver. And I had interactions with all three schools. So it's easy for me to get to know the community actually just working at the university, because I had a lot of positive interactions with students. What ended up happening was Cherry Creek School District, where I work now, had a position open directed at equity, culture, and community engagement. And seeing some of the issues our youth was going through, I wanted to get back with the school district. So I was selected for the position. And the city of Aurora is in the top five for immigration. It has the largest, not just say the largest, it has one of the largest populations of immigrant and refugee populations, and over 152 different languages spoken in the city of Aurora. So we have a large Ethiopian population. And when you look at that civil war that's going on in Ethiopia, it plays out in the city of Aurora because some of those different groups don't get along. We have several different groups from Central Africa, West Africa, the Caribbean, different parts of Central Europe, different parts of the Middle East, and different parts of Latin America. So 152 different languages spoken. So that's where the initial diversity starts. And we have to hire teachers and hire faculty and staff that's able to speak different languages, whether it's French, Amharic, Arabic, Swahili. we need people that's able to speak all these different languages because the population is that big. The students are able to adapt quicker than the parents. And so, but at the same time, we have to engage our parents. Race, in the city of Aurora, Blacks make up about 8% of the population. But in the Denver metro region, they make up about 18% of the population. our Latinx population is about 20 to 25%. And our Asian American population is about 10. Native American population is about 3 to 4%. Although our indigenous population, it's hard to count the numbers because some of them live on the different reservations where the surveys and the census has not captured all of the, of those populations. Pops, you started talking about the LGBTQ community, very big in the state of Colorado, and they have a tremendous impact of what goes on in the city. Several discussions about what they call gender neutral restrooms is being talked about, not just in college, but talked about in high school and in middle school. Because of just different things that have taken place, students are able to identify themselves. So you could be in middle school, born biologically born a young lady, and say that you want to be called a male, and the teacher has to honor how you say you want to be identified. Part of that is a lot of legislation that has passed. Part of it is a lot of different movements that are taking place. And so when you begin to talk about diversity, when we first started talking about it in the 80s and the 70s, it was mostly the relationships between Blacks and white, because we're coming out of Jim Crow, because of Brown versus Board of Education. And then when you began to talk about the protests that happened at LA High School, where Latinx brothers and sisters said, we're not getting our fair share of resources for our people. So you begin to have those three, and of course our indigenous populations, those organizations are those different groups of people when you talked about diversity. Now it is grown. It's the word intersectionality. I'm Black, I could be identify as gay, identify as transgender, and be Catholic. And all of those different things that make up that person has broadened the scope of diversity and what diversity and inclusion mean. Diversity, at least in the state of Colorado.
Okay. Anybody want to respond to this issue of diversity? And the challenges you may be having at your school with regards to diversity, because immigration has had a profound effect in certain Black communities, because it's not like it's Mexican Americans, it's like El Salvadorian, Nicaraguan, and, you know, and you get caught up in their own conflict as well as they come together to have conflict with you, you know, I mean, as Black youth, you know, I mean, especially if it's having problems in LA Unified with those conflicts. But what are some of the major issues y'all face with diversity as far as that made them hire you or made them say that they needed a director of it? Why is the director, and what is your job? What do you do?
My job is to connect the school district with the community, make sure that the superintendent is connected with the community organizations, that the superintendent has a relationship with the community organizations, and at the same time, making sure that parents who feel like they're not being heard, community members that feel like they're not being heard, be a liaison for them. For example, just recently, there's a sister that's an activist, but is also a parent in the district. Had went to go visit the school to check on her niece. She's on the emergency card, and the principal went to her with all these documents saying, legally, you can't be here. That parent called me and said, oh, what's going on? And so we were able to get it resolved. But it also says the work that we got to do with our principals, the work we got to do with our teachers, the work we got to do with our administrators. For the most part, I think people are doing amazing work, but we still have people who don't know how to engage us, who don't know how to talk to us, who don't know how to properly deal with their own biases. And it comes out and how they treat us when we step on the school grounds or when they or when your child enters the school. So what we do is visit every single school in the district to check on how they're engaging parents of color. What does their student voice look like? What is their equity plan? And who's on their equity team? And we're doing our second round. We'll be visiting the schools four times throughout the academic year, not so much to point fingers, but to let them know that they have to have these infrastructures in place and that if they don't have them in place, we're there to support them. The superintendent is the one, when we report to the superintendent, that address the accountability part. And if they're not doing what they're supposed to do, there are some things that can happen to that school that, but that's up to the superintendent. So that's my role.
All right, I'll come back with some more questions. Anybody else have any questions?
Yeah, I got one. Hey, can you define the term Latinx?
Yeah. When we began to deal with our different Mexican-American, Chicano, Chicana populations, because that was diverse within itself, and there was a gender component there, some of the people in the community preferred the term Latinx to be inclusive of people who have different sexual orientations within the community, as well as the broader scope of the Hispanic community, Mexican-American community, Chicana-Chicana community. That was a term that was brought to the University of Colorado Denver and came out of that community. Not all of them agree. As a matter of fact, I got some people who I talked to that says, we don't identify with the term Latinx. We don't agree with the term Latinx. We prefer to be called Latino or Latina, or Chicano or Chicana. So there's still some, when we begin to talk about identity within that community, not everyone is on the same page.
Now, what is the base? Is it Mexicans?
The base, and that's the thing. If you're in Denver, it's Mexicans. If you're in Aurora, it's all different parts of Latin America.
Oh, so it's diversity there?
Yes.
Okay. Thank
and
you.
And that's where you get that. Some people saying, I don't want to be lumped in as Mexican because I'm not Mexican. And some Mexicans don't want to be lumped in with the other groups of Latin America. So you have that internal, I ain't going to say fighting, but definitely how the different ways people want to be identified.
So it's fractionalization.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Doc, you have any issues that you want to raise?
No, this is all informative. Like I said, I looking into Colorado, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, and Hawaii to relocate, and I'm more into land. I wanted to get a couple hundred acres, and like I said, I looked around where the Black population at. Yeah, it's around Denver, Aurora, and I was looking at Colorado Springs, and when I go figure out where it's a couple hundred acres, I do a little population thing. I don't see any Blacks, maybe one or two. So I didn't know how it would be to live out way out remote somewhere in a couple hundred acres.
It's and to answer your question, it depends on side of the Bennett. You're probably about 30 minutes from Aurora, where there's which is extremely diverse. But I will say where you would live at in Bennett, it's not as diverse. Colorado Springs is mostly a military city. You got the military base out there. You got some universities out there. It's a hit and miss out there, depending on where you buy those acres. Land is a little cheaper in the Colorado Springs area. I would also say, depending on what you want to do with that land, you also want to look at access to water, which municipality has a good water system, if that's what's needed for the land that you're trying to develop. If water is essential, you definitely want to do your research on that as well.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Khalid?
Yeah, no, just wanted to comment. We were talking about the youth and the youth violence. It seems like, to me, local government should be involved in assisting with devising a plan for programs where children can get youth jobs. But there's something, and they know that they know we're building 75% of the states in the United States build more prisons, have more prisons than they have universities and colleges to get degrees. Why? There is a bounty on the average Hispanic black person, poor white person's head. Mm-hmm. It's a month to me, I see money when they cut out the youth programs, flooded out here with drugs. Why? Okay, now you got to get money instead of working for it. They created an atmosphere for you to go to prison. And because they get money for that. I know a young man that was shoplifting, got 4 years, shoplifting out of CVS. No, I know it personally. He got out, got violated. He stole again. They gave him another 4 years. I tried to talk to the DA and tell this man with a because I do youth counseling. This man is a drug baby. He has early childhood trauma that he's going through, but I could never get a good audience with them to get them to understand. So I'm looking at local government, politicians, and our government abroad to assist in funding money to programs to help with what you're talking about. It takes money. They take money to fatten their pockets with private owned penitentiaries. You know, a black kid could go steal something and he'll get 7 years in the same crime to be committed by somebody of another race, you know what I'm talking about, and get diversion. And so the problem I see is a plan. It's not an accident. It's a plan to disrupt the household and a plan to keep the community in chaos with violence.
All right.
And that's why
I agree with you.
So until we get...
I agree with you, Uncle. First of all, it's good to see you. Miss you a good
time. You too. Love you.
Love you too. Just to answer a little bit of that question, each metropolitan is different. And so one thing I can say that I am happy to see to stop that, what I call that school to prison pipeline, or that, you know, just that pipeline of brothers and sisters going to jail, period, since the post-Jim Crow era. One of the things that we've been doing is trying to get it starts with that DA office. A child could get caught stealing, but it's how that child is charged that's going to determine what type of sentence they're going to get or what type of justice they're going to receive. So we're working with the DA offices to do more diversion, more restorative justice, especially for nonviolent offenses. And even if it's violent offenses, if no one was seriously hurt or anything of that nature, look at something different. If they are seriously hurt, then let's begin to look at something, because evidently prison is not working. Prison hasn't worked all these years and it's not going to work. So,
excuse me for cutting you off. I call it a turnaround program. You put them on probation, you don't give them a job, they don't have housing, they got to do what they learned from the streets and from prison and come out and put those things that they learned in prison, how to scheme, how to hustle to survive. We're being bombarded with so many different things that it's not just one topic that you have to address. They're coming at us in many ways, from the LGBT community, dealing with that issue, people with mental health issues. I worked at Dual Diagnose Program. I was the director. I just came back from a chaplain's conference in Sacramento. I'm a chaplain. I go into prison. I talk to people that 55 years. I talk to people and counsel them who have done 55 months. But the thing is, the crime doesn't fit the punishment, even though if the punishment do fit the crime, what is the end result when they get out?
It's well known that when you go in the store and shoplifting, they give you a burglary case, and that it give you more time. They don't drop it. White kids, they drop it to get shoplifting. Black people to keep the felony. Second.
It's like a slap on the wrist.
The 1968, it was called the Anti-Riot Act. Okay. Congress passed the law. They called it the the H.R.A.B. Brown Law.
Right.
That you can't cross state lines to incite violence or riot or either participate. But you had a whole bunch of people do it in Washington, D.C. on January 6th, and ain't nobody mentioned the 1964 law that applied to them. And nobody charging them with burglary, and they broke into the White House. So we understand that. But we got to get to some diversity, man. We can't stay on the violence thing. I got to let him wind up with he just did a thing on diversity. I got to see if somebody else want to make some comments. All right?
Well, yeah.
All right. Well, Shanice?
You know what? You guys had me thinking, and it's as a mother of a 15-year-old son, as well as being an educator, it's things with youth, whether the youth get incarcerated or commit crimes, like those killings you were telling me about at the high schools, Omar. Mm-hmm. All I could think of was my son. And I know I would sit up and say video games is the devil, because the video games, because my son's in that phase now, gets on my nerves. But then I had to think, well, at least he's not in the streets. He could be doing something else. But I would say we do need to lower the age of, kids getting part-time jobs and even, summer jobs as well. Because I know summer, it's age 14. And then I don't know if they still go on the income or not out here. I'm assuming they still do. But I know to get a part-time job is 16. And my son is determined right now, to get a part-time job. He's been like that since the age of 13, 14. Not only I want to, I just want to make my own money. I want to be independent, and I want to be able to budget more. And, they don't have budget and finance programs, which they need to really bring back in middle and high schools, as well as in different programs they have, such as after school programs, you name it.
I would also say, not just working, but also teaching them entrepreneurship skills. A kid could probably make about $3,000-$4,000 in the fall here in Aurora because all the leaves fall. Don't nobody feel like my leaves are still on the ground. I go out there once every other week to clean up those leaves. If I found a little teenager that wanted to come and clean them up, when it's snowing out here, you can make a couple of grand just shoveling the snow. We have to begin, and some kids can make a couple of grand on social media. So I think it's, yes, teaching them workforce jobs and things of this nature is one piece, but also teaching them, for kids who want to go in that direction, entrepreneurship is not for all kids, but for kids who want to go in that direction, teaching them entrepreneurship skills as well. There's this kid at a high school I was meeting with. He resells tennis shoes. He buys tennis shoes off the internet. He reconditions them. He buys them for about $15-$30 and sells them for about $200. And as he don't see himself ever working for somebody, he's only about 14, 15 years old, And these are skills that our kids have. We just need to get them the resources so that they can either go into the workforce or learn how to operate and sustain a small business.
Brother Hembrick?
I don't have a lot to ask, but I kind of agree with the brother about putting those kids to work. I used to pay kids to, rake my leaves and, clean out my flower beds. And we can't find, government entities to, to employ them. you know, the neighborhood camp. There's houses in the neighborhood that need work, you know, done, and we can hire the kids to do them, you know, without all the paperwork and all of that. But I had a question about the diversity in Colorado with the Latinos.
Yes.
Has there been a kind of a push, because they're all descendants of Native Americans, mm-hmm. and the Native American population up in Colorado should be kind of large, because that's one of the last strongholds, you know, where they were before the frontiersmen kind of wiped them out. So I was curious about that. Is there a push, you know, for them all to come together and band together as far as that goes?
I would say there's a lot of different coalitions. And within those coalitions, of course, at times you have your different groups who say, hey, I don't want to work with you because of what your people done to my people, because you still got some infighting and you still got some historical trauma that has taken place within those organizations. But you are seeing a stronger push. Our indigenous brothers and sisters and our groups, and also working with our different Black groups as well. I can name several coalitions I'm on where we're trying to influence voter turnout, where we're trying to get some people voted out who's not working in the best interest of our community, where we're trying to get different initiatives passed that are in the best interest of those who are traditionally underserved. So I stand right next to some of my Latin brothers and sisters, and I would say that they have been there on the front lines when it came to the Elijah McClain case, and even some white allies was on the front lines when we either were marching or had to show up to court or had to do what we had to do to support the families. Some of the marches, matter of fact, many of the marches I didn't participate in, because I didn't understand what the intention and goals were. But the ones I was able to align with some of the other brothers and sisters I just mentioned, hey man, I gotta say they did some tremendous work. So some of the alliances are holding strong and definitely getting a lot of work done.
All right, brother, appreciated what you were saying. You know, you kind of restored my faith in a couple of things that I didn't really, you know, like dealing with. One was NAACP, but I'm glad to hear what you're doing. And the other one was politician, pimps, and preachers. You know, I put them in a category, and I say a whole lot of educators and folks in those areas, they don't give two hoots about kids. And, you know, there's a lot of people in education that, you know, that's supposed to be teaching them that really don't care about them. So I want to commend you on the work you're doing. I just got one last question. It's kind of a little humorous. You know, you mentioned that you were Q, right?
100%.
Okay. I got a partner back in D.C. is big time with that. And I'm waiting on y'all to change from that Greek stuff to the... I'm going to let you go on that one.
Well, I will say this. Khalid Muhammad was a Q. Dr. Carter G. Woodson was a Q.
I know a lot of them were.
Just to add to that part, yes, we could change our name, this, that, and the other, but it's really about the history of the organization, and many of those brothers and sisters has a strong Afrocentric platform. But I hear what you're saying, that knowing the history of the Greeks and the different things that they've done, it is sort of a counterintuitive situation in regards to all these Black people who are professed to be Afrocentric in the Black Greek Letter organization. But I hear you, brother. I hear you.
All right, brother. Appreciate you.
All right, Rasa King. Rasa King.
Yes, just enjoying the commentary. Enjoying
it. All right. Well, listen, we're going to, first of all, Kuma, I want to thank you for coming on. You have a wealth of knowledge and experience, and deeply appreciate what you're doing out there. I've been out there a couple of times, And you showed me a great time, and you showed me all over you and your mom, and me and Aubrey Keogh, we all went to dinner, and you got a good network out there. What about the new building y'all got? What are y'all doing, and how did that come about for the NAACP?
When I was running for mayor in the city of Aurora, although I wasn't successful in winning the seat, I was able to make a lot of connections. There's an organization called Visit Aurora. They're like one of the travel organizations and conference organizations for the city. A gentleman by the name of Bruce Dalton, him and I had a few conversations when I was running for office. And he said his group was moving to a different site, but they still had 6 months on their lease, and asked me, could the NAACP use this space and what would we use it for? And this was in the middle of COVID. And I said, we would open up an economic development center. And so they're paying the lease through March of 2022. And we're currently fundraising so that we can stay in the place for the next 3 to 4 years. And some of the programs we're running out of there are the grant program I talked with you about, where they can receive technical assistance through the director, a gentleman by the name of Chip Boykins, who does the day-to-day operations at the Economic Development Center, help people start their business, run their business, give them advice, connect them with different resources in the city or with the chamber and things of this nature. And it's free to the community. We're talking about close to 5,000 square feet is where my mother had her book signing at this past Saturday. We've held several community meetings there. And once again, it's free. We didn't want the city, we didn't want anybody to have to pay for nothing. So if people want to learn how to open up a business, the resources are free. If people need workforce information, that information is free. We have a lot of partners such as Amazon. The city of Aurora is coming through a little bit, and several other nonprofits. The Second Chance Center, which does amazing work in the community for people that's been recently incarcerated. They have, less than 3 or 4% that go through their program go back to being incarcerated. They're doing amazing work. And the Village Exchange Center that work with immigrant and refugees. And recently, some other organizations have come on board. But that's what we're doing with the Economic Development Center. We got a lot of programs that's going to be coming up in regards to entrepreneurship, teaching kids about entrepreneurship, and some other programs that are coming up. So happy with what we're doing, but that's pretty much what the space is about. Some of the programming that we have. We also have a wellness space in there so people can go pray. We also have a media room where people can go do podcasts, or do their videos, or do their Zoom meetings and things of this nature.
All right. Richard, any comment as we get ready to close out?
No.
All right, then. Brother, first of all, we want to thank everyone for chiming in, and we really want to thank you, Colomba, Asante Sana, many thanks, and you're welcome to come in and listen and be a part of our network with Brother Rashiki. You can get with him. We're trying to, grow, and we really deeply appreciate you sharing all the wealth of knowledge and experiences that you have. And, we're on every Monday at 6. Spread the word in Colorado. Rashiki is on the Wednesday. Rashiki, you're going to give a summary of your next program. He's sharing the screen. So this
week we're on mute.
Okay, we got Marlon Potts and Ernest Hall, two of Hembrick's classmates. One went to Dominguez High School, one went to Compton. So we were looking forward to them discussing coming up Compton, which they're going to talk about their experiences and analysis of Compton through the 50s and the 70s up until the present day. So that should be very interesting.
Richard, we're looking forward to your input. You are, you got a family that's deep in the Compton, brother. So hopefully you're coming in this Wednesday, man. Something to do.
Yeah, and both podcasts are open to the public. Anybody can join through the website, communityeducationnetwork.com.
All right. We want to thank everybody for coming in. And again, urge you to come Wednesday. And I'm going to be right there talking about coming up Compton. I really want to hear that because, you know, from Mona Park to Bunch, Ralph Bunch to Centennial to Compton College. I'm still in Compton, you know, right around the corner. So I want to know. I was on the city council, school board, and college board of trustees. So, you know, I want to hear what they got to say. All right, brother Omar, any closing remarks?
Just want to say, Pops, I just want to say thank you for the platform and all the role modeling you have done. There's no way I'm doing the work I'm doing without your mentorship and without your support and without you modeling what it is to be a servant leader.
Yes, you can.
And you know, definitely my family, my uncle that's on the call, my mother, who has been a strong inspiration in my life, and all my family members and my friends. Rico, I want to thank you, brother. You always, matter of fact, when the brother was asking the question about the Black Greeks and their name, you were one of the ones that asked me about that years ago. As soon as he asked, I thought about you. And so just want to thank all of you for the work you're doing. And I'm here to support or to listen and to learn. So thank you.
Well, we have,
appreciate you.
I got a video by Sheikh Abu Bakari, who's an attorney. And he had a video called, Is It Chic to Be Greek? And he really went into it. I'm going to have to get that to Brother Hembrick because he runs across a lot of that. And then second, tell us quickly before you go about your mom's book and if can people get it because she wrote it for meditation, for prayer, and she's deep into it, you know. And
let me have the title of it, please.
And send a copy, we'll post it.
Rico, I'm going to have to do is send it to you because the book is upstairs. But
okay.
I'll send it to you with the picture and with the information for people to purchase. But her book is, my mother been writing since the 90s, and she write for all the different holidays, people who are grieving, people who are going through different challenges, or people who need to celebrate something. She's had over close to 300 writings, and she took her best writings and turned them into a book. Some of them are poems, and some of them are just spiritually uplifting, or some of them are thought-provoking, just to have you think about particular situations or to help you heal through particular situations. So I'll make sure I get you the information.
Okay.
I'm extremely proud of her. And I'm sure I'll be attending many other book signings, considering I'm the one that got to operate the computer and lift the books.
All right. Okay. Hey, and Brother Richard, if y'all and you and Kyle want to come on and talk about the role of the drum and the congos and the beat and the history of the drums, because y'all have some classic drums. Y'all are drum collectors, and maybe we'll get a date for y'all to come on and demonstrate a little bit and then talk about the history of the drum in Africa and other parts of the world. All right?
Thank you. Yes, sir.
All right. Then, because y'all hit the beach, and I know y'all beating at the beach right now. I ain't going out there. I'm just glad y'all doing it, and we want to thank y'all so much, brother Hembrick. Any little closing remark?
No, sir.
What about you, the good doctor? This is one of the man thought provoking brothers you ever want to listen to, brother. Good doctor. Any closing remarks?
Oh, nothing. That was good information. Appreciate you coming on. Hopefully, come back on again and talk about a little bit more. Just one question. Real quick. Yes. You talked about the brother got shot, and you talked about the incident with the sister with the painting on the wrong. Are they, because we're here in California, are they, how you say it, underreporting racial incidents? Or is it kind of, about they're on top of reporting all the major incidents out there? You think they underreport incidents? Are you having more incidents out there than we know of?
There's a lot more incidents that are taking place. I'm just giving you the highlight of probably the high profile ones. But there's a lot of incidents that taking place where you have nooses that's been found of people in their workplace, or we've had quite a few, especially in the field of education, where we've had parents report that their child has had some issues take place with them, either in the classroom or by other students. The ADL has a lot of the data, as well as the state of Colorado has a lot of the data. So it's definitely more people reporting now than ever, especially since the George Floyd incident. Everybody is reporting anything that take place either in the community with family members or in their workplace. And the NAACP, the ones that land on our desk, and how we work is that we don't try to push ourselves on people. We let people know we're available, what resources we have, and we want them to invite us in instead of us inviting ourselves in. And when they feel comfortable inviting us in, then we're able to help them the best way we can.
All right. And Brother Khaled, you got any closing remarks? You're on mute.
All I can say is follow the money, and we'll come up with a good solution and some support to how to deal with the community ills and O's. Follow the money.
All right.
I'm serious.
All right. Well, we'll be on next Saturday. I mean, this coming Wednesday, coming up Compton, and I'll let Brother Rashiki know our next venture. I just invited Richard and you and Nimashan to come on and talk about the drums and talk about the history of the drum and y'all musical experiences with the drum playing, and especially yours with the various groups and bands you've been playing with. So we'll be looking for that. All right. Y'all are excellent percussionists and rhythmists, with regards to your music, and you always play our family reunion. You always play different jazz clubs and different events for the community, from Porter's retirement to just saying, whenever they call them, y'all are always there for the drums and drum calls. So thank y'all so much for that. And we need to know the history of the drum and the lessons we can learn from it.
Thank you. It'd be a pleasure.
It was a Congo player that gave me the name Amon-Ra, Big Black, played with you, Master Kayla. He's one of the first brothers to play with three Congos. And he's the one that suggested me to get the name Amon-Ra. But anyway, we'll be back. We'll join it again. Looking forward to this coming Wednesday, Brother Rashiki. Each one teach one. This will be on YouTube. You get a chance to hear yourself and questions and answers. And if you know any subject or any issue, Shanice, that you think we could talk about, from missing Black girls, that, everybody's looking for Heidi, but won't nobody looking for Shanae. And so we gotta talk about that. All right.
All right.
Rashiki, it's on you to close out. You're muted.
Each one teach one in Conscious Corner.
All right. Thanks again, Kumba.